Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Selling Greenville, your favorite real estate podcast here in lovely Greenville, South Carolina. I'm your host, as always, Stan McCune, realtor right here in Greenville, South Carolina, and you can find all of my contact information in the show notes if you need to reach out to me for any of your local real estate needs whatsoever. Also outside of Greenville as well, I've mentioned this before, we have a relocations department within my company. I can help you relocate anywhere in the world, so just let me know. And just a reminder, as always, please like, rate, review, subscribe. Off to a bad start here. Like, rate, review, subscribe, all those things. Make sure that we get the show out to as many people as possible. That's the main way that you can support the show. But there's also one other way, and that is by supporting our sponsors. So this episode is sponsored by Piper Insurance Group. They can help you with all your home, auto, and umbrella insurance needs. They're an independent insurance agency, so they can quote multiple different carriers and give you the best rate possible that you can find. Rather than just going to an agent with a Geico or a State Farm or whatever, they can quote multiple different carriers in South Carolina, North Carolina, and Georgia, including investment properties. So if you're looking for a company to help you insure flips, rentals, ground up new construction, residential or commercial, Piper Insurance Group, they're my go-to for all of my insurance needs related to home, auto, and umbrella. So please contact them for a free quote today. Contact information also in the show notes for your benefit. All right. Today we're going to talk about some national political trends and how they might be influencing the local real estate market here in Greenville. Obviously, they're going to influence all of real estate, but this is a Greenville podcast, so I'm going to specifically talk about it through the Greenville lens. But for starters, it is Fed Week, okay? And this is a very, very big Fed Week. This week, we are going to find out what the Federal Reserve will do when it comes to interest rates. We've been waiting for this for a very, very long time, if you've been listening to the show. Quite frankly, by the time you listen to this, most likely you will already be able to look up what the Fed has done. If you're listening to this very early morning on the 18th, maybe they haven't made their decision yet or haven't publicized their decision yet. They've already made it. But they by Wednesday afternoon, the afternoon of September 18th, you should know what the Fed has done. And the question is not so much, will they lower rates? I think that pretty much everyone is under the impression that they are going to reduce the Fed funds rate in some way. The question is it going to be a 25 basis point reduction or a 50 basis point reduction? To think about that in layman's terms, that's either a quarter of a percentage, a quarter of a point, 0.25%, or half a percent, 0.5%, which would roughly take the Fed funds rate from around the 5.25% rate that it's currently at to either 5 or 4.75%. Now, just as a reminder, the Fed funds rate isn't the same as mortgage rates, so don't get these two things confused. The Fed funds rate is basically the rate of overnight borrowing, which I'm not going to get into all the weeds on that. You guys can look that up. It's not the same as the 30-year fixed rate mortgage, but it does influence indirectly mortgage rates, specifically the 30-year fixed rate and the 15-year fixed rate mortgage. Actually, all mortgage rates, even variable rates and all of that, are indirectly affected by the Fed's funds rate. So when that number goes up, mortgage rates tend to go up. And when the Fed funds rate goes down, mortgage rates generally go down as well. It's not quite that simple. But again, talking big picture without getting into the weeds, that's generally how this works. So again, the question is, at the end of the day here, not just how much the Fed will reduce the Fed funds rate, but also how much of this is already priced in, right? Because we already have Treasury and mortgage markets that are already pricing in that the Federal Reserve is going to reduce rates. So it's very possible, for instance, if the Fed only reduced rates by 25 basis points, that we really won't see much of an impact on mortgage rates. If they did a 50 basis point cut, however, I could see that impacting mortgage rates, but also all financial markets, potentially causing even maybe recession jitters, because typically a 50 basis point reduction is only done by the Fed when they think that our economy is in really bad shape, okay? So it's going to be interesting to see if they end up going with that and taking the chance that the messaging that comes out of that is that our economy is in bad shape. We'll have to see. Like I said, I'm recording this before their decision. I'm starting to think that maybe I should release my podcast later in the week because there's just so many things that happen on Wednesday and Thursday that I can't account for, you know, when I'm recording this on Monday or Tuesday, but it is what it is. I'm doing the best I can with the information that I have when I get it. If you're listening to this on or after the afternoon of September 18th, you can very easily find out what the Federal Reserve has done. Okay, and now this brings me to my next point, which I shouldn't have to address because this is a real estate podcast, but I feel like I do need to address this, okay? I'm, you know, very involved in politics, and I don't favor one party or the other. I am kind of a part of the Purple Party, if you want to call it that, the Realtor Party, if you want to call it that. I'm more focused on housing-related issues than on specific parties and what their platforms are. And so when I talk about politics, I don't talk about it through the lens of here's my party and here's what they're doing and here's the other party and here's what they're doing. No, I don't think about it in that way. I don't have a party for myself personally. And so I get kind of frustrated when I see narratives out there that aren't accurate. And one of them that I am very, very sure is going to happen, and I've already seen this brewing for quite some time now, you're going to for sure hear a narrative from conspiracy theorists saying that the Fed is dropping rates in order to help Vice President Kamala Harris. Now, this is one of the easiest to refute conspiracy theories out there, and I'm just going to briefly address it so that we don't have any confusion on this, because I could see people commenting on YouTube and on Facebook, which, by the way, I love if you guys do that. But I could see people commenting, oh, the Fed's doing this just to influence our elections. Okay, let's just talk about this briefly. First off, if the Fed wanted to help out Harris, Vice President Harris, the time to do it would have been much, much earlier than September. Remember, anything the Fed does has a lagging effect. The housing market, really, from my perspective, is the primary market that will feel an immediate effect from the Fed moving rates. Now, obviously, if there are recession jitters that come out of this, we'll certainly see, as I've already alluded to, financial markets. You could see crypto do some wild things. You could see the stock market do some wild things. They might not respond well. They may respond well. We don't know exactly how they're going to respond. Certainly, the Fed doesn't know. They've stopped basically modeling what's happening here. They're focusing on data, which means that they're not focusing on their models anymore, which means that they're just guessing right now. So the Fed doesn't know what they're doing, quite frankly. They don't know exactly what the effect on the market would be if they reduced rates a little bit or reduced rates a lot, which is kind of the way the framing is with regard to a 25 basis point reduction versus a 50. Long story short, really, the primary market that would be really directly impacted in the short term by the Fed reducing its rates would be the housing market. But again, we are entering into the slow season of real estate here in September. And so again, if the Fed was looking to influence the election, and let's just tease out for a second, the Fed's like, you know what? We want people to be able to borrow money for cheaper so that they can finally buy the houses that have been unaffordable for them. In order to prop Vice President Harris, okay? Let's say that the Fed was doing that. They should have done this way, way earlier, okay? The fact that they haven't done it way, way earlier is one of many indicators. They're not doing this to help a certain person or a certain party. And again, because most of the broader economic impacts of the Fed tinkering with rates won't really be felt in the economy for at least 3 to 6 months, them lowering rates in September won't impact the economy enough before November to swing the election. It just won't. That's not how this works. However, and I'm willing to go out on a limb on that, right? If you don't believe me, trust me, it doesn't work. You won't see any major changes in the polling data or anything like that after the Fed reduces rates. However, even though the Fed, the results of what the Fed does tends to, generally speaking, lag, so it doesn't have an immediate impact, the immediate impact that that the Fed's actions do have is causing headlines. And as you're listening to this, you can probably easily Google the headlines to see what you know, Washington Post, the New York Times, all of these various publications, the Wall Street Journal, what they are saying about what the narrative is that they're saying about the Fed reducing rates. And now if you think the headlines will help Harris, I'm very skeptical about that. I think you're going to see kind of conflicting headlines as a result of this. I think there will be kind of a mix of headlines saying, you know, the Fed drops rates, which will be relief for borrowers. I think that that is one headline you'll see a lot, along with the headlines about how the Fed is dropping rates to avoid a recession. Well, that one headline is more positive towards Harris, while the other one uses the R word, recession, and uses it in a way that makes it look like the vice president is completely impotent against or towards stopping a recession, which isn't entirely true, but in the short term it is. And that's not really what Harris wants to project, right? She wants to project that she will be in control, that Biden has been in control, and that she will continue to be in control. And so when these rate reductions happen with the Fed, I don't think that these headlines are all going to be inherently positive for Harris, or at the very least, I don't think that they're going to be material that Harris can use, which I'll get to here in a second. So long story short, if the Fed wanted to influence the election, the easiest way for them to do it would be to simply say that the battle against inflation has been won, and it will be easy sailing from here. They could just put that out there, put that messaging out there, and that would immediately be tons of material for the Harris campaign. Like, just one sentence put out by Fed Chair Jay Powell would give Harris weeks of material. But guess what? They have avoided saying that this whole time, and even the past week, multiple Fed governors have made statements saying the battle isn't over. Jay Powell has been super careful to not say the battle with inflation is over. Extremely cautious in his wording. And I don't see any reason to believe that that will change on Wednesday. Now, there may be some headlines that indicate that the Fed lowering rates is a sign that the inflation fight has been won, even though the Fed hasn't said it, which would obviously be a theoretical positive for Vice President Harris. But in my opinion, unless the Fed says it themselves, I don't think the headlines will hold much weight, because Harris can't just point to a few headlines as proof that our economy is heading in the right direction. Why? Because the Fed could very easily contradict her. In fact, the Fed has loved doing this. You know, as soon as markets start doing weird things to try to anticipate the Fed, or as soon as the media starts to speculate on the Fed, they love to put out statements and say things that then basically pull in the opposite direction of what markets and what the media are doing. And so imagine if Vice President Harris started latching onto headlines saying that the fight with inflation has been won, and then the Federal Reserve chairman goes on stage and says, yeah, the inflation fight has not been won. That would be a really, really bad look for her. And that's not something that I think she's willing to risk, because, again, the Federal Reserve has already been doing this for, has been contradicting narratives for quite some time. And they have shown no indicator to me that that's going to stop anytime soon. And I don't think that Harris is going to risk basically getting into a war of words with the Fed, because that would be a terrible, terrible look with her. Even if she were in agreement with Jay Powell, she certainly is not in agreement with all the Fed governors and presidents. And any one of them putting out statements contradicting her would be a really bad look. So long story short, if the Fed were trying to influence the election, I'm sorry, this has gone on longer than I thought, but I just feel the need to address this. If they were looking to influence the election, they would have already taken action, and they would have already pivoted in their messaging to say that inflation has been tamed. They've not done either of those things, and so they aren't influencing the election. It's really that simple. Additionally, I've said this before on here, I'll mention it again, Fed Chair Jay Powell was appointed by President Trump. He was retained by President Biden, but he isn't a Biden guy by any means. Nothing he has done or said since Trump appointed him has been politicized, in my opinion. And so it really, in my opinion, is a baseless conspiracy that he is trying to influence the election. So just ignore those headlines. Okay, as I already said, I've gone on longer than I planned to with that. So let's pivot away from the Fed and let's talk about former President Trump and Vice President Harris. What are they proposing for real estate, and how might it impact things? Let's start with former President Trump. Midway into his term as 45th president, back between 2016 and 2020, Trump signed an executive order creating a White House Council on Eliminating Regulatory Barriers to Affordable Housing. And so essentially the Trump administration flat out put the blame on the housing shortage and on prices spiking on burdensome regulations. And remember, this was, you know, a lot of this happened prior to the housing market completely taking off until, except for, you know, some of this did go into effect, or some of this did happen more towards the end of 2020 and right before President Trump had to vacate the White House in 2021. But here's a statement that was made at that time from the Trump administration. Federal, state, local, and tribal governments impose a multitude of regulatory barriers, laws, regulations, and administrative practices that hinder the development of housing. These regulatory barriers increase the costs associated with development and as a result drive down the supply of affordable housing. They're the leading factor in the growth of house prices across metropolitan areas in the United States. Now, Trump's executive order cited restrictive zoning, growth management controls, rent controls, cumbersome building and rehabilitation codes, excessive energy and water efficiency mandated, and undue parking requirements as particularly onerous. What do I think about this? I think that Trump's team is 100% correct here. There is no question the regulatory burdens and numerous fees that are being imposed on developers have a major impact on housing affordability. We can see this right here in Greenville County and in the neighboring counties, Pickens County, Lawrence County, Spartanburg County. If you build a development, you have to pay thousands of dollars in impact fees, sometimes multiple impact fees. Then you have tap fees. You've got potentially traffic studies you have to pay for. You have foundation surveys you have to pay for. And that's in addition to all the due diligence that's already been paid for in order to acquire the land that the developer is going to build on, and then the costs of actually acquiring the land itself, the cost, the sales price of purchasing land. And then all of that is on top of all the onerous buffer zone and green space requirements, et cetera, that are being imposed right now on developers. These regulatory fees alone can easily add up to over $100,000 of additional costs to building that are passed directly onto a buyer before any construction has ever happened, okay? People need to understand this. These regulatory burdens are real. They are just costs that get passed on to the end buyer. They don't actually help housing affordability in any way. So any county council person that tells you that they're doing impact fees and all these different things in order to help housing affordability, they either don't understand basic economics or they are lying to you. Now, at the end of the day, former President Trump, trying to become the next president again, Trump, there's only so much that he or any president can do to affect this, right? Are they going to just swoop in and override states and county councils? They can't do that. For what Trump is proposing to actually happen, they would have to be very creative to try to reduce local regulatory burdens. And obviously that's outside the scope of what a president can normally do. Now they can certainly incentivize various ways for municipalities to reduce these burdens, but it's unclear whether that would really change things, right? Do you think county council would change their stance on development simply because, you know, maybe Greenville County would get some tax breaks from the federal government or some grants from the federal government? Quite frankly, I don't think that the county council would, because a lot of these people in county council have run on anti-development platforms. So I'm not sure how realistic it is that Trump could actually fix this, but he is identifying an actual problem and one that we face right here in Greenville County. Now, another constraint that developers have is on land. Land has obviously gotten to be very expensive, and this has had a huge impact on the cost of housing and why housing has skyrocketed. And so another thing that Trump has done is he's pledged to make federal land available to build up to 10 futuristic freedom cities the size of Washington, D.C., complete with flying cars to speed commuting to work. Here's a quote. "We'll actually build new cities in our country again. These freedom cities will reopen the frontier, reignite American imagination, and give hundreds of thousands of young people and hardworking families a new shot at home ownership and, in fact, the American Dream. That was a more recent proposal that Trump had. That was back in 2023 that Trump mentioned that. Now, I think opening up federal land is a good idea, as long as that wouldn't, obviously, encroach on protected wildlife. Nobody wants us to do that. As far as futuristic cities, interesting idea, flying cars and all of that, but Trump hasn't really released enough information for me to really assess that, so I'm not going to comment on that specific proposal. But I think opening up more land is a good idea, right? Because I've already said all of this land there's a lot of land locked up right now with people that don't want to sell for one reason or the other. Developers are having a hard time buying cheap land. And so if you can't buy cheap land, you can't build cheap houses. It's really that simple. So I think that is an interesting proposal, although I'd like to see more information on it. Additionally, an argument that Trump has made is that the housing supply and affordability problems will also improve once millions of illegal immigrants are deported, which is a position echoed in the 2024 Republican Party platform. Excuse me. This is a hot talking point among Republicans right now, but I am personally not a fan of this sort of rhetoric, as I haven't personally seen this to be true at all. People love to argue and talk to me about how, we have all this illegal immigration in our country and they have to live somewhere. And so they obviously must be increasing the cost of housing. Well, it's true that there is an illegal immigration problem in our country, and it's true that they have to live somewhere. And guess what? I actually know where quite a few of them live in Greenville. And I'm telling you right now, in Greenville, they are not impacting the housing market materially. They buy the worst houses out there. Even the ones that professional house flippers won't touch. And they will rehab them to house family members. That's what's happening. I'm not seeing situations where U.S. citizens are getting outbid by illegal immigrants in bidding wars or anything of that nature. I'm seeing the only times I've seen immigrants that I suspected were illegal purchase homes was when they purchased homes that nobody else was willing to buy. And they were just cheap, like fire burned homes is what we're talking about. Cheap fire burned homes that then they rehab and rent out to a relative. A lot of these illegal immigrants aren't buying homes or renting out homes. And again, they're renting out homes that are owned by a relative who bought a really terrible home that nobody else would buy. So to me, this whole illegal immigration thing is just a distraction from the real issues. That being said, I don't want anyone to get this twisted. I am not supporting illegal immigration, okay? Those coming into our country, they must follow our immigration laws. So again, I'm not suggesting we shouldn't fix the immigration problems that we have. I just don't think that these problems impact housing affordability as much as they impact other aspects of our economy and our crime rates and things like that. In fact, you could even make an argument that the illegal immigrants who make up a huge portion of the construction workforce actually make housing cheaper since they're willing to build houses for less labor costs than it would cost to pay your typical American citizen to do the same work. Again, that's not me supporting illegal immigration. I'm merely pointing out that the relationship between immigration and housing costs is not, in my opinion, nearly as clear-cut as former President Trump indicates that it is. Okay, let's talk about Vice President Harris and her proposals. First off, she proposes home builder tax credits and down payment assistance to first-time home buyers, and that is really the heart of her plan to address housing affordability. So we'll get to the down payment assistance here in a minute, but let's talk about her economic plan that she rolled out in Raleigh, North Carolina, just a few weeks ago. She called for 3 to 4 million new homes to be built over the next 4 years, and here's what she said. Here's what her team said. There's a serious housing shortage in many places. It's too difficult to build. She doesn't mention the regulatory burdens quite as explicitly as Trump, but she's alluding to it there. It's too difficult to build, and it's driving up prices. As president, I will work in partnership with industry to build the housing we need, both to rent and to buy. By the end of my first term, we will end America's housing shortage by building 3 million new homes and rentals that are affordable for the middle class. She said that exactly a month ago today. I'm recording this September 16th. She said that on August 16th. Now, out of everything I've seen talked about this election cycle, this quote by Vice President Harris is one of my favorite because it shows that she and her team understand the core issue of housing economics and affordability is that supply is too low for the demand. We haven't had a voice as influential as her bringing attention to the supply problem in real estate since, well, since the problem existed the past 15 years. I've never heard someone with her kind of clout say something like this. Obama, as president, alluded to an impending supply issue, but remember that he was president when demand was so suppressed by the poor economy, which he had a role in, that people weren't willing to hear that there was also a supply issue. Now, however, people are finally looking for answers to the housing affordability question, and increasing supply is the simplest and best answer. But we have to ask the question, how feasible is this? Similar question to I asked with Trump with his, you know, wanting to ease the regulatory burdens. How feasible is it to build 3 or 4 million homes in the next 4 years? Unfortunately, not very feasible. I've looked at the data, and for 3 to 4 million homes to be built over the next few years, over the next 4 years, development would have to ramp up at a pace that it never has before. Builders would need to find land. They would need to find more labor. They would need to find cheap building supplies overnight, and it just doesn't work that way. Now, Vice President Harris seeks to solve that problem with tax credits for builders to construct entry-level houses. It's kind of similar to the low-income housing tax credit, which has encouraged building rental houses since 1986. But quite frankly, everything I've seen about these kinds of subsidies, I haven't seen that they've actually reduced the cost of housing in the past, so I don't really see this having a huge impact in the future. So I love that Harris is bringing attention to the supply problem, but I'm not sure that she has actual real-life solutions for how to solve it. Now, interestingly, she and Trump, there is overlap in the Venn diagram between them because she also advocates for building home on federal land, which I find very fascinating. So it seems like no matter who we get for president, this is something that could be something that we see from them. We could see opening up of federal land to help builders have more options for housing affordability. But the devil is in the details. And quite frankly, like many of Vice President Harris's proposals, we don't have many details yet on what she really means by that. So stay tuned on that. Now, I mentioned before down payment assistance, so we need to talk about that for a second. Harris wants to lower barriers to purchasing starter homes by proposing a whopping $25,000 in down payment assistance for first-time home buyers. This is a bad idea. This is a really, really bad idea. So Harris had my favorite thing out of all of this, which was focusing on supply, and she also has my least favorite thing out of all of these proposals in $25,000 in down payment assistance. Would be great for me as a realtor, but would be really bad for the housing market because it would only lead to increased prices. And, you know, what I think that this shows is that Harris knows that she can't just build a bunch of supply overnight, right? So she's thinking, well, I'm going to try to push for building 3 to 4 million homes, but that's going to take some time. So we need to solve the problem right now. How do we solve it right now? We'll just throw money at the problem. Give first-time homebuyers $25,000, and that's a short-term fix, and then hopefully construction and development ramps up, and then we have the long-term fix in place as well. But unfortunately, this short-term fix of the $25,000 down payment assistance would only break things more by just flooding money into real estate that would then cause more bidding wars, more price increases, and more chaos. I am not a fan ever of these types of proposals. Obama did something similar. He did a first-time homebuyer tax credit. It injected money into real estate for a couple of years, and then as soon as that tax credit expired, real estate recrashed. And we don't need that sort of thing to happen again. What we need is stability. We need to find stability and predictability. That is what the market needs. That's what the market wants. That's what buyers and sellers want. We don't need all of these, you know, we don't need to be going from one stimulus high to the next, right? We need to sober up as an industry and find our footing and reach that point where we're having, you know, standard predictable appreciation, standard predictable mortgage rates, standard predictable ebbs and flows of the economy and of real estate. And unfortunately, when you come in and you start injecting all the stimulus into the real estate market, you disrupt all of that. So I hate that proposal by Harris, and I hope that that doesn't happen. I think it would be hard for her to get that passed unless she also became president and had control of the House and the Senate, which is possible, but unlikely, I think, at this point. So long story short, both candidates had proposals that, in my opinion, are both good and bad. I, quite frankly, don't think I can really encourage you to vote for either of these candidates simply on the basis of their housing proposals, because, in my opinion, neither is clearly better than the other. Although, out of everything, I'm most excited about Harris's messaging on the supply issue we have, but I'm also least excited about her messaging on needing more stimulus. We don't need that. We do need the supply. So it'll be interesting to see if the supply messaging that she has put out, which locally here in Greenville is not a very popular thing. People don't want to hear we need to build more houses. So I'm curious if her saying that is going to work, right? Are people going to listen to that and respond well to that? That'll be interesting, along with all of these other things. We still have a couple of months left. Actually less than a couple of months. We're coming quickly to this presidential election, and it will have an impact on the real estate market, but probably not as much as people think. What the Fed is doing has much, much more impact on the real estate market. So I will be focused much more on them than I will be on the presidential election. So stay tuned. We will be talking, I'm sure, about this next week, what the Fed does and what impact it might have, what the headlines are saying, all of that. So please stay tuned. Please like, rate, review the show if you want to get more of this content. Find my contact information in the show notes if you need a realtor in the Greenville area. And please use Piper Insurance, whose contact information is in the show notes for your home, auto, and umbrella insurance needs. And we will talk again next time.